The snooty waiter, the sullen waitress, people love to complain about servers, but serving food for a living is no picnic. Today, we begin our summer series, Iowa at Work, with a look at the service industry. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Every Monday this month on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we'll be exploring different aspects of the working world in Iowa. One in three Iowans found their very first job in a restaurant, and all of us have been on the receiving end of this service sector. This hour, we'll talk about the challenges of making a living in the industry, and we want to hear your stories. Have you been a server? Tell us your worst story. Have you had a nightmare dining experience? We want to hear from you, too. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we begin our summer series, Iowa at Work. Every Monday this month on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we'll be exploring different aspects of the working world in Iowa. Today at noon on River to River with Ben Kiefer, we'll be discussing working for minimum wage. But first, one in three Iowans found their very first job in a restaurant. And of course, all of us have been diners from time to time. This hour, we'll talk about the challenges of making a living in this industry. And we want to hear your stories. Have you been a server? Tell us your worst story. Have you had a nightmare dining experience? We want to hear your story, too. You can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start the hour by focusing on servers, and we've already collected a few pet peeves.
Makes me mad when people get mad about the money because I have no control over what the restaurant charges, and then I'll end up getting a crappy tip because they weren't happy with one of the restaurant's policies. Or when they ask when their food's going to come up, servers don't have control over how fast their food takes to make.
Probably the largest pet peeve, though, is dietary restrictions that customers want you to cater to, whether they actually have them or not. So the whole gluten craze right now, they get angry that we don't have gluten-free buns or whatever, and they don't actually have a problem.
Well, people don't wait to be sat. That's annoying, you know. Or if you're telling them you're going to get them a table, and then they sit in one that you haven't quite bust yet, that's annoying. It's like, well, then you got to kind of reach over them, and like, or just they're sitting at a dirty table. It's like, just calm down. We've got control of the floor. We'll get you sat as soon as we can. You know, you got to help your fellow human beings out with these things. You know, we're trying to serve you food. We're trying to give you basic nourishment. Let's work together on that.
Like, one time we had a customer and they wanted a hot beef, and we gave them the hot beef. It was hot. You know, you could see the steam coming off of it, and they sent it back because they said it was cold. And so we got them another one and made sure it was really hot, and they still refused to eat the hot beef and didn't want to pay for it after they would eat half of it and send it back.
When they show up all at different times and people are not considerate, they get very annoyed and they're not understanding. That's a pet peeve. It's like you have to be understanding the fact that you all show up at different times. You have to be considerate of the server. He's not just there for you.
Yeah, I've had people complain about the prices a lot, which like is out of my control. Like, I just work here. I don't make the prices. And then just people who are impatient, I guess.
A few server pet peeves collected by Iowa Public Radio producer Lindsay Moon. And the food service sector is growing in Iowa. Last year, Iowa added 2,600 jobs in this sector. The National Restaurant Association projects that we'll see an additional 12,300 jobs in the coming decade. And my guests today have had a lot of experience in this industry. Carolyn Elbert is a lecturer and internship coordinator for the Hospitality Management Program at Iowa State University. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Michael Laval is here. He's the general manager and culinary director of the Des Moines Embassy Club. He's also involved in many other restaurant ventures in Des Moines. Hello, Michael.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And let's start out by talking about servers, because, of course, at a restaurant, these are the people who are interacting with the public the most. They're not highly paid. Most of them are not highly trained, but these are incredibly important people for your restaurant. I mean, Michael, when you think about the servers in a restaurant, what are some of the most important things about this job?
Well, they're the really important touch point with the customer. And I think in the club industry, It's an incredibly service-intensive environment. And then it goes down to maybe at our hub location where you have a barista putting a cup of coffee across the counter on a very quick, simple exchange. So the servers are incredibly important, and I think in higher-end operations like a club, we just don't put it all on the server. You know, there's a dining room captain, there's a server assistant, there's a maitre d'. Probably one of our managers greeted you on the way in, or a host. It's more of a team than just putting it on that server.
Well, and Carolyn, in preparing students to work in the service industry, in the restaurant business, you're not preparing people to be waiters and waitresses, although I'm sure a lot of your students have been or will be for a time. You're actually preparing people to manage wait staff. What kinds of important things can you teach students about the people who will be interacting with the public?
So one of the things we really focus on with our students is getting them to understand the guests and putting themselves in the guest shoes and putting themselves in the server's shoes. So we really teach them that everyone's a guest, internal or external. So the servers are guests in your establishment just as much as the guests that come in off the street. So teaching them to put themselves in each other's shoes, you know, did they have a hard day at home when they're coming into work? You know, understanding and being empathetic and understanding leadership. And that's our really biggest focus, is because you're dealing with people from all different backgrounds in the restaurant industry. You know, people that maybe this is their first job, or someone that's been in the industry, as we like to call them, lifers, where they've been lifetime servers. That's what they do for their profession. Or people that have college degrees, or people that don't even have beyond a high school diploma. So we're really a unique industry because we employ so many different people versus other industries. So that's really our biggest focus, is training our managers and our future people for the hospitality industry to understand there's a wide range of people working in this field.
Well, and I'm sure it differs from restaurant to restaurant. And Michael, you probably, with the club industry, have a very different kind of experience than people would at, say, one of the big chain restaurants, like a Chili's or an Applebee's, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of turnover on wait staff in a lot of restaurants, right, Carolyn?
Absolutely. Our industry, I tell the students, I go, sometimes it's like a revolving door. And you have to be patient, and you still have to put forth the effort to train every single employee that comes in the door and give them the same effort and the same, you know, shot at the job, even though there is a chance that they maybe only work 2 or 3 weeks because they find out this isn't the job for them. But you still have to approach them with this positive hospitality spirit that we need to train them, and we're here for the guests.
Well, and how much – oh, Michael, you wanted to jump in on that?
Well, yeah, we have almost no turnover. I think the club industry got informed a long time ago that you couldn't achieve excellence with people who are in it only part-time. We have many, many people that have worked for us for decades and decades and decades. And we like to say it's nice people taking care of nice people, and it's truly the case. But we were early adopters of health insurance for our servers and, you know, a retirement program, and just giving them a lot of respect for the professionals that they are.
Well, and I think that brings up some very important questions, because clearly you're in a position where you treat your service staff very well, and I'm sure that shows in their performance.
I hope so.
Right. Well, so many other restaurants are either not willing or not in a position to do that, but yet the expectations for servers are still very high, at least from the diner perspective.
Well, you know, what's happened is that now, with the proliferation of meals taken outside the home, your interactions with servers now are times a factor of what they were 20 years ago and 30 years ago. People go out to eat a lot, and they have a lot of interactions now with people in the industry that, frankly, were much fewer when I first got into it.
And do you think that has changed our expectations?
Yes. I, across the board, see much poorer service in every industry, every interaction I have in a retail environment. And I'm a pretty easygoing person, but I recognize good service, and I think most people do. And it's, you could lay the blame on a lot of things, but I think at least for people that came up in the digital age and are so focused within, I find they're very awkward in their exchanges with adults and with other people. They're much more comfortable typing them something than they are face-to-face conversing. And so I think that's Carolyn's problem to figure that out.
Well, and Carolyn, it goes both ways, right? It's not just the young servers who might be uncomfortable interacting with the diners, but you've got diners who may be uncomfortable interacting with the servers.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times, even just generally going out to eat, where I look over at a table and I'm, you know, that's, I guess, one of the challenges of being a former restaurant manager and sitting down and eating. It's hard because I'm looking around at all the tables and looking at the interaction, and I'm seeing that people aren't talking to each other even at their own tables. They're on their phones. And so the server's having a hard time trying to figure out, how do I interact with this table when they're not even interacting themselves?
Well, how about when the two parents are conversing and I see it all the time, the two children are sitting there on their video games over family dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh, man, you're missing a chance here.
So with your students, Carolyn, how do you prepare them to deal with that? Because you have to engage those customers even though they're terminally distracted.
It is a challenge, and it's almost where we have to embrace technology. You know, it's going to be one of those things where it's not going away. So how do we use it to our benefit? And some of these restaurants, you know, you talked about chain restaurants, and I'm not going to name any specific restaurants, are using technology to help, you know, maybe have the guests order things from their table or pay their check through their computer system. I've been to country clubs that are using iPad systems for their wine lists. And they're using technology to kind of help engage and for them to see things. And so it's, how do we use it but not lose that guest service, that customer focus?
Well, and I can imagine that depending on that kind of technology also has an impact on the staff. And if this is an experience that you've had as a server, we'd love to hear from you. But does that also reduce tips and reduce income if people feel like, well, I ordered the food myself on an iPad, I don't need to pay you?
Yeah. Quick service restaurants, QSRs, where you go up to the counter and place your order and take a number. We had that exact discussion with my wife's restaurant at the Botanical Garden. Gosh, should we just go to that and not have table service? And, you know, you get a quicker table turn. People get their food maybe quicker. And we chose not to, but it's what you're going to see more of.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about working in restaurants this hour as we begin our summer series on jobs in Iowa, Iowa at Work. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa.
Like a locomotive, they were streamlined. And the blue prints were drawn up from a dream of mine. Yeah. Slap him up, put him on a train, out of Michigan up to Maine.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're starting our summer series, Iowa at Work. We're looking at different aspects of the working world in Iowa all month long, Mondays on Talk of Iowa and River to River. You'll also hear some pieces during our morning edition and All Things Considered throughout the month as well. Today at noon on River to River, a look at working for minimum wage or low wage jobs. This hour, we're talking about working in restaurants. A lot of us have been servers. All of us have been diners a time or two. We'd love to hear your stories this hour. If you have been a server, tell us about some of your nightmare stories. We'd love to hear them. 866-780-9100. You can also share your pet peeves, or maybe you have a perspective from the other side of the table. Nightmare dining stories. We'd love to hear those, too. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Michael Laval. He's general manager and culinary director of the Des Moines Embassy Club. He's involved in many other restaurant ventures in Des Moines. Carolyn Elbert is here. She's a lecturer and internship coordinator for the hospitality management program at Iowa State University. And Michael, right before the break, you were mentioning your wife's restaurant, Trellis, which is at the Des Moines Botanical Center. You have had a debate in the family about how much service to provide to quick service or table service. And, you know, with the economic downturn a few years ago, I sort of expected to see service improve because people needed the jobs. We were seeing older people going into service jobs instead of teenagers in service jobs. I don't know that I saw service improve, but it does seem that we've been through an evolution. The economy is on an upturn again, but people want something different out of service now. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think they do need more of a personal connection than maybe they needed at one time. They are in their jobs. They're so focused in that I think they need to go to a dining room. I love dining rooms. Spent most of my life in them. And just the whether it's the piano player playing in the background, it's all the hum and the conversations going on. A nice downtown restaurant I'm involved with. It's just really the crossroads of downtown in that dining room. And there's just a great feel and vibe to be in that environment. And I think people, they need that now because they're so drawn in by the different media that they're using all through work and social times.
Carolyn, how do you see things evolving?
I completely agree with the fact that the guests go into a restaurant with that expectation of not only great food, but great service. This may be their escape from reality. Maybe they had a really tough day at home or a tough day at work, and they're going in and they're expecting someone to take care of them. And when you think about the hospitality business, that's what we're there for. We're there to take care of guests. We're there to make them their day better. We're there to give them great food. And that's one of my biggest focuses with the students is, you know, people choose to go to your restaurant. And you want to take care of them and you want to make sure that they come back. And what brings them back and the things that we remember about great restaurant experiences is not only great food, but great service. You know, did that guest remember my name? Did they anticipate my needs? Or was my drink refilled before I even had to ask for it? And that's what people look for. Those simple things that we can do that are just, you know, simple things that we can train and teach people, and that's one of our biggest focuses.
Well, you say simple things. I've been doing some research for this show, and I ran across a blog post that was in the New York Times a few years ago, and it was 100 things restaurant staffers should never do. Mm-hmm. And all of them honestly sound pretty reasonable, but 100 things, that's a lot. And of course, it was put together by somebody who was opening a pretty high-end restaurant in a big city. But still, to train your wait staff to meet these kind of expectations must be an incredible challenge, Carolyn.
It is. And that's why we develop, and I'm sure at the Embassy Club they do too, we develop training manuals. You know, we have systematic approaches of how we go about things. You know, these are the simple steps. We have scripts that we teach them of things to ask, suggestive selling, some basic steps to go through for training purposes. And there's lots of great resources out there, you know, through the National Restaurant Association, through local organizations that help us kind of train and develop the employees. And it's a continuous process. I mean, training never ends and there's always teachable moments.
And is there a lot of focus grouping as well? Like, I hear people complain about, oh, I hate it when the waiter or waitress introduces themselves to me and tells me their name and that they'll be taking care of me. And I thought, well, of course, they were told that they had to do that at whatever restaurant that they're working at. So, I mean, are those kinds of actions focus grouped?
I think the great thing going back on and talking about technology, great things like Yelp and TripAdvisor we kind of use those almost as focus groups. I look at those reviews that people are getting, and I'm sure that most restaurateurs will look at their reviews and use those to help them develop their training. You know, what are people saying about us and how can we improve on this? If people are saying they don't like our approach at the tables, let's change it. It's kind of a changing process, and we have to be able to evolve and constantly change because if we're not a couple steps ahead, we're going to lose our guests because, like you said at the beginning, there's so many restaurants opening up. How do we stay current and keep our guests coming back to us?
I can imagine, though, being in the industry and looking at those comments, it would also be very easy to say, come on, people, why are you spending time complaining about something that's so minor and going to all the trouble to post it on a website?
Isn't it a lot of thought and given to perhaps a $10 transaction,
right?
You know, something like that, where you don't see the same thing with other, you know, legal fees, doctors, you know, whatever other. That people take everything in the food business very personally, and they feel greatly offended if they don't receive good service, and whatever their concept of it is. I would say, though, that Yeah, you get the crew that you train in any food service situation. But there are just some people who shouldn't be in the service business. And I think it's a little more organic than that. I don't think you can push a square peg in a round hole with some people. We really look for people who are certainly gracious but are also givers.
And tolerant.
Yeah, I mean, they're not motivated by the gratuity. They would do, just because of their own professionalism, they would do the same job whether they thought they were getting a 10% tip or a 20% tip, because that's their standard. That's them.
I want to go to the phones here. Philip is on the line in Iowa City at 866-780-9100. Hi, Philip.
Hey.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, you know, all through college, I went to the University of Iowa and kind of paid my way through college, working at a hotel there. Started as a server in the restaurant, kind of worked my way up as a supervisor, and then ended up running the concierge lounge at one of the hotels in town. And I just had great experiences. You know, I guess I have, you know, probably one horror story, but I can count on one hand the amount of times I was treated rudely, and that was over the course of, you know, all through college. You know, the guests were just great. You know, tipped me well. And, you know, and especially the concierge lounge, it was kind of the club lounge atmosphere. You know, we were given a very good wage, you know, good benefits. And so tips weren't expected, but they came in, and, you know, guests were just generous. And I think it was because you're not just serving food or, you know, or drinks, although that was the job. You know, you could really make people's lives a little bit better. You know, somebody might be coming in for a hospital visit, or, you know, a loved one is in the hospital, and, you know, you can make their day a little bit brighter. So it's more than just serving food and drinks. It's really being a bright spot in people's days.
And, Philip, have you left the industry now?
You know, I did. After I graduated, one of my guests actually hired me to go to work for him. And, you know, I travel all over southeastern Iowa now for sales. But, you know, it was all that experience in the hospitality industry that really, you know, building these relationships that I guess helped me to get where I am now.
Well, Philip, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us.
You bet.
You can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And it seems to me, listening to Philip, that there must be part of being a great server, there must be kind of a performance aspect to being a great server, where when your guests leave, you feel like you just really nailed it. Carolyn, is that something that you observe?
Absolutely. And I tell the students sometimes in the hospitality industry, sometimes we are actors and actresses. And that's why you'll find when you go out to L.A. or California, half the people working in the restaurant or the hospitality industry are people that want to be actors and actresses. That's what we do. We're there playing a role, making sure the guests have the best experience they possibly can. And then when they leave, you have this great sense of, wow, I really made someone's day. Or to have the guests leaving and saying, thank you, you were the best part of my day. Or you feel like you're part of your family. And I had the experience of working in country clubs. And I'm sure in the club industry, you feel this is the same. You do feel like you're a member of some people's families. You know, you watch children grow up in the club industry. You have their wedding there. So there's a really unique aspect to our field for that.
Let's go back to the phones. Laura is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Laura.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. When I was about 7 months, 8 months pregnant, this was about 13 years ago, I was working in a wonderful family restaurant, Mexican family restaurant, and I had a table, lovely little family, a little girl, a mom and a dad, and it was a really busy night. And for some reason, somebody had put the margaritas, I guess because we'd run out of containers. Those were normally in a sort of a glass carafe, but instead they put it in this other sort of pitcher-like thing, which we use for lemonade.
Oh, no.
And, you know, you're pregnant, you're kind of like, it's a busy night, and I find myself accidentally serving this little five-year-old girl margaritas, and I come to the table. The mom's really not happy, and I'm just devastated, and I just start crying right there because I'm crying at everything anyway, and, you know, apologize. We made it all right with them, and still, you know, this memory to this day kind of makes me cringe, but I thought later that night, I thought, you know, maybe that kid had the best sleep she's ever had, you know, after that experience, but It was not fun. And,
it does sound like so, the kind of thing that nightmares are made out of.
Yeah, definitely. So she was fine, though. It only took like a couple of sips. They figured it out pretty quickly, but very careful now.
Oh, wow. Well, Laura, and have you left the industry?
I actually have. I actually I have an eco-friendly cleaning business, and so very similar. A lot of customer service, giving people a great experience, and making them feel like they've spent their money well. So it's the same kind of deal.
All right, Laura, thank you so much for your call. And, you know, working in the restaurant business, Michael, I know this is a family affair. In your family, your wife has a restaurant. Your daughter also works in the business. People who work in the business long term, you have to make some serious sacrifices about the kind of hours that you're willing to work.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It's a very time-intensive career. I tell people it's not a job. It's really a lifestyle.
Well, and you're working a lot of evenings. You're working a lot of weekends. You're working a lot of holidays. You're working really Carolyn, I think you put it very well when you said that people who want to work in this industry have to be willing to work when everybody else is playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Carolyn, with your students, how do you prepare them for that? Because I'm sure I remember being a college student. We didn't always think things through very well. So, you know, they think, oh, I want to work in a restaurant. Won't that be cool? Is that something you have serious conversations about?
Absolutely. So I teach probably our Introduction to Hospitality class, which is our large lecture class for the students, that this is one of their first classes they take when they decided to keep hospitality as their major. You know, if I'm going to put hospitality management as my major, this is the first class they take. And usually around day one, I introduce myself and I let them know I'm third generation hospitality. So this is one of those things. And you talk to a lot of people in the hospitality industry, there's, you know, it's a family affair. You know, it's in your blood. You grew up with this. You're used to this. You understand the lifestyle. But I tell them right away, you work when others play. I was in the hotel industry. I would get phone calls sometimes from my staff at 3 a.m. because hotels never close. We're out of eggs. We're out of this. We have to run to the store. Something happened. The power's out. We need a backup generator. Things are constantly happening. And if you're just honest with the students right away, and so it's not a surprise when they're graduating. And the other thing we do is we require them to do internships, work experience. So they get their feet wet. They start to get a feeling of what the industry is like to see if they like it. Because there is a chance that this isn't for them. And the last thing you want is to be, you know, done, to be graduating, to see, okay, maybe this wasn't the career for me. So we really kind of focus and push them to work and get as much experience and different opportunities that they can get.
And what makes it worth it, do you think? I mean, you've worked into an area of the industry where hopefully you get your weekends off these days, mm-hmm. Carolyn. Michael, probably you're there, maybe,
yeah,
as well.
I probably could, but I don't.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. What makes it worth it? I know a lot of people think, oh, opening a restaurant would be so cool, or working in a restaurant would be so cool. But then the reality is just really hard work. It's hard to make money at it. What makes it worthwhile to you, Michael?
Well, the problem we have right now is the TV shows that give a very unrealistic look at the business. The professionalism that we try and develop has been pretty much undermined by people with spiked hair spouting, you know, profanities back in the kitchen area somewhere. So our profession's been hijacked a little bit, I think. And so a lot of people don't understand the reality of it is. And so we have an internal dialogue in the industry about what is a chef. That's another program someday. But it's for me, it's the personal connections and sense of community. I gained some expertise in creating meals, but it's more of the whole environment. I have just a great feeling of all the friendships and relationships I've gained through the industry, both with my coworkers and with the customers.
How about you, Carolyn?
I'm going to quote my father here, and he says, everybody has to eat. And that's what he said when I switched to this major. When I went to Iowa State University, and I went there for architecture, and I switched to hospitality management. And he's like, you brought you back, you know, third generation hospitality just brings you back. And he goes, everybody has to eat. And you're always going to have a job and people are always coming to you, kind of that unique feeling. And it feels good. It's that, you know, somebody says this was the best meal I've ever had, or you made my day. And it's such a great immediate feedback that you get in our industry that you don't get other places. You get to interact with people that you don't have that if I'm working in an office building.
Creating memories for them.
Absolutely. You know, I get to walk around. I'm not sitting behind a desk. I get to meet people, smile at them, make their day. And there's something so good about that. You know,
it's a really positive environment.
It is.
I mean, you're in a very happy place most times in a restaurant.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Michael Laval. He's the general manager and culinary director of the Des Moines Embassy Club, also involved in many other restaurant ventures in Des Moines. Carolyn Elbert is here. She's a lecturer and internship coordinator for the hospitality management program at Iowa State University. We also want to hear from you, 866-780-9100. We're going to turn to diner etiquette here in just a few minutes, and we'd love to hear your stories. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. This is Talk of Iowa.
A bottle of red, a bottle of white. It all depends upon your appetite. I'll meet you anytime you want in our Italian restaurant.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about working in Iowa. It's part of our summer series every Monday through the month of July on Talk of Iowa and River to River. We'll be exploring different aspects of the working world in the state. And right now, we're talking about working in the restaurant business. One in three Iowans got their very first job in a restaurant. And now I want to turn the focus to diners. All of us are diners from time to time, and of course, serving food for a living is really hard work. Most servers' tips make up a large portion of every paycheck, and as a diner, we have to decide how much to tip. We got some feedback from some diners in Iowa City.
I always tip 25%, no matter if the server's good or bad.
I always do 15, like even if the waitress is bad, but if they're good, it's like at least 20.
If the waitress is bad, I tip bad so that they know that it was bad. But like if I have decent or good, I do 20%.
It depends on how many people I'm with, but 20%. Sometimes I tip more then because it takes more to wait on so many people.
I mean, obviously it depends on how big the bill is, but I usually just do the standard, like whatever percent it is.
Personally, like when I go out, it's never 10%. It's always higher than that. So I mean, even if it's a bad service, I can understand if it's really bad, less. But I mean, 20% is usually where I'm at.
All right. So there are some thoughts on how to decide how much to tip, and I'm sure my guests have some thoughts about that as well. With me this hour, Michael Laval, he's general manager and culinary director of the Des Moines Embassy Club. Carolyn Elbert is lecturer and internship coordinator for the hospitality management program at Iowa State University. And also now joining us is Patricia Tice. She's owner of Etiquette Iowa and author of Agra Manners, Tips for Professional Success. Hello, Patricia.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure.
So let's talk about tipping. What is the appropriate percentage to tip?
Well, I think there's a bigger picture going on with tipping. The percentage certainly is important, but there are some wait staff who are now fairly compensated, so it might say on the bill, no tipping. So there are restaurants, and I've experienced a few of those here in the Midwest, where they just don't have tips at all. But the key is, and we've been talking about this the whole hour, it's the human behavior of it. It helps us feel better if we tip someone, even if it's stated tips, you know, we discourage tips because waiters are fairly compensated. People like to tip because it helps us feel better.
Well, and Carolyn, in the industry, there are restaurants where waiters or waitresses make less than minimum wage because they're dependent on tips. And there are, of course, restaurants where they do get a higher wage. How do you know?
It's hard to tell. You know, the restaurants aren't going to post how much they pay their servers. It's really a matter of you have to figure this out. Club environments typically are...
We add the service fee right on. Mm-hmm. And then oftentimes the members add more to it. that's directed, but we pool the tips among the staff.
Okay, and a lot of restaurants do that as well. So although you're tipping your waiter or waitress based on their service, then it will get divided equally among all of the wait staff.
You're mentioning a minimum wage. It's servers are, frankly, highly compensated for the hours and effort put into the business. In my opinion, they receive per hour quite high income, and it's a little bit embarrassing to me. Our industry fighting against tip, you know, raising the minimum wage, but there's it's a kind of a more involved conversation about the tip credit that you can take against the wage for people who
receive your income taxes every year. Although I'm sure that varies wildly from restaurant to restaurant.
Oh, it does, but in my experience, servers make a good return for their efforts.
Carolyn, do you have thoughts on that?
Again, it's really based on the restaurants, places that you've been, places that I've worked, and in the state also. You know, the state that you're in also dictates the amount of money you're making. Yeah. I used to manage a hotel in Louisville, Kentucky, where we paid our servers $2 an hour. But my servers were making, some of them, six figures. So yeah. It really depends on, you know, the environment that they're in the state and how much it's that effort of service. You know, how much effort are they putting forth when they're taking care of their guests?
Well, and this is something that, of course, diners have a lot of control over, how much they tip the wait staff. And I think that that's something also that diners have to get experienced at. I mean, you think about young people going into restaurants. There's a lot of uncertainty there. So there's some diner education that has to go on as well, right, Patricia?
That's correct.
So how do you learn? How do you learn how to tip?
Well, there are a lot of different venues. You know, the program at Iowa State University, if you just ask people, there's a general percentage. We recommend between 15 and 20% of the total bill if you want a tip. But every restaurant you're in, depending on the state you're in, is going to be very different. So it just depends.
All right. I want to go back to the phones. Craig is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Craig.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question, but it's more of a comment from a diner perspective. You know, the restaurant that is going to get my return business is the one, it's not based on the food they serve. For me, it's the experience, the interaction with the server. If I go into a restaurant and I get a feeling of no connection with the server, then I'm unlikely to go back there. But a place where I go and the server makes me feel welcome, we exchange first names and we're able to have a friendly interaction, that's the place that's going to get my business.
So even more important than whatever the meal tastes like, it's how you feel with that interaction.
It is. I want a family feeling connection, or at least a very good friend. You know, that's the way I want to feel when I go into a restaurant, and those are the restaurants that will get my return business. Now, as far as tipping, the one tip that I do frequently, and it's a non-monetary tip, but it means a lot. If I get really good service, I will ask the serving staff, I want to speak with the general manager. You know, and I think a lot of times that makes them, uh-oh, what did I do wrong?
Right, very nervous, I'm sure.
Yeah, and when the manager comes out, I, in front of the server, I say, I just want to know that Audrey here has done a great job of taking care of my needs tonight, and I really, really do appreciate you having her as part of your group.
All right, Craig. Well, thanks so much for sharing your experience with us.
Sure.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call for you to share your thoughts and your experiences. And Patricia, when people are dining in a restaurant, I mean, Craig has his approach to talking with the wait staff and talking with the general manager. What kinds of things do we need to be aware of? We were talking earlier in the hour about those tables where every single member of the party is sitting there and looking at their phone and maybe even ignoring the waiter or waitress. And I've heard complaints about, I've read complaints from different wait or different restaurants saying, you know, people complain about their food being cold, but that's because when you deliver it, they sit and look at their phone for 10 minutes and then their food's cold. Or you get to the table and they're not ready to order. What's the responsibility of the diner, Patricia?
Well, the diner has a huge responsibility. When we go into a restaurant, what we're looking at are relationships between people. And the number one thing that I look for when I walk into a restaurant is I want someone to notice me. So even if it's very busy with people coming into the restaurant, if the concierge or if the host can just say, hello, we'll be right with you in just a moment, that makes all the difference. It's about building relationships. And from the guest's perspective, as a restaurant guest, we have a stake in that as well. We need to be respectful to the wait staff. Most of the time, that wait staff, a lot of the time, I should say, are very well trained, and we need to honor the fact that they're very busy trying to balance many sponges that are all popping up out of the water at the same time and keep everyone happy. A few years ago, I did a dining program for 25 teenagers, if you can imagine. They were ages 15 through 20, about 20. And one of the rules that I have when I do those programs is no electronic devices. That meal went on, happy clink of glasses, wonderful food, wonderful conversation among young people. And at the end of 2.5 hours, when the dinner ended, one of them said, oh, my word, I haven't even thought about my cell phone for 2.5 hours. It sort of gives us a break. And for people who go into a restaurant and spend a lot of time on their phone, really, the main purpose of going into a restaurant is not only to enjoy a fine meal, but to have a wonderful conversation with the people they're with and with the wait staff. And I hope that we can get back to the point where we can just take a little break from our cell phones and really connect with each other through conversation while we're at the dining table.
Well, and Michael, earlier you were talking about how our watching the Food Network or food-related shows has changed our expectations and our understanding of the restaurant business. We also, of course, a lot of people spend a lot of time Instagramming their meals, and this foodie culture has really developed. Has that also changed our expectations? Maybe it's not about the experience, it's about the food.
Well, it's some of it is really kind of obsessive. A lot of us in the industry are kind of beyond having wars between chefs and having contests of it's an impossible thing to determine anyway. But yeah, it's changed people's perspective of meals, and I hear people order and I say, well, I want to do the spinach, or I want to do. I mean, we kind of like we do food now, and it's just changed some of the jargon expectations for sure. And I don't think in a really positive way, Charity.
We have earlier I mentioned that 100 things that servers should never do, and this is certainly on that list, but it is something that you hear quite a lot. This is an email from Cindy. She says, I've noticed recently that servers have begun asking if they should bring change back when they take your money at the table. I find this rude and unnecessary. If I want you to keep the change, I'll tell you. You don't need to bring it back to me. Otherwise, you should graciously return a customer's change and be thankful for the tip you receive. This happened to me the other night. The bill was $26, and I gave the waitress $40. Did she really think she earned a $14 tip for a table of two? I was a waitress for 10 years, so I do understand the work that goes into being a good server. So another pet peeve there, but you do need to be careful of the very little things, don't you, Carolyn?
Absolutely. There's one big thing that I talk about with my students, and I call it moments of truth. And every single little interaction that we have, you know, from entering the restaurant, as Patricia was talking about, and having that eye contact of being just with you, that's someone's moment of truth, which means, okay, this was a good interaction. This is going to be a good dining experience. It's that I take the check back and I say, I'll be right back with your change, instead of saying, do you want change back? How do we change the verbiage? How do we look, what's someone's moment of truth? Where maybe that guest, after someone said, you know, do you want change back, now is going to choose to go to a different restaurant because that was one of their kind of points where, you know, now I don't want to go back there because I don't like the way the guests are treated by the server. So there's thousands of these moments of truth that are constantly happening in our industry, but every single guest has a different moment of truth.
The diner responsibility, before we leave that topic, we're nearly out of time, but the way that we behave when we're in a restaurant, when you spend time looking at blogs, and again, in preparing for this show, I was reading a lot of people's horror stories, but I mean, some people have very different ideas of how they should behave in public. There was a party who was complaining because they were all singing along to a song that was a party of 20, and the management asked them not to do that in their restaurant. And then the management sent them a letter and after the complaint and said, well, I'm sorry that you mistook our restaurant for a karaoke bar. So it wasn't a very nice exchange. But Patricia, the way we behave in a public place, that's something very important for the diners to think about, right?
It really is. It's about general respect and honor of the restaurants. Restaurants are a lot of work. They always have to have all the food stock. They have to have the food prepared, the wine list ready to go. When we as diners go into a restaurant, and, you know, there are more formal restaurants and there are less formal restaurants, then we need to somehow respect ourselves enough to match the atmosphere and the demeanor that is in the particular restaurant we go into.
I'm going to go back to the phones here. Last call this hour. Elise is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Elise.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your story?
I think this is addressed to Patricia. I was recently in a high-end, a very nice restaurant here in Des Moines, and I'm wondering if staff are still trained, because this when I would serve, and that was, you know, years ago, frequently, and you could tell by the different eye contact and the relationships, that the man was going to order for the woman.
So you were told to speak to the man because he was going to be doing the ordering.
Correct. You know, but it didn't take very long to figure out, no, that's not really the relationship.
Right. And so you just recently had it happen where a waitress did not talk to you?
Correct. And I made it very clear to her that we were there as friends and that I was going to be ordering my own food. And I know it embarrassed her a bit, but I felt like she really needed to learn this because it didn't change her behavior. And I spoke to the manager then on the way out. I know the young lady was probably highly embarrassed.
All right. Well, we're nearly out of time, Elise, but I think that is an important note about changing times and changing mores and changing behaviors in restaurant and service. Carolyn?
Absolutely. You know, we're in a totally different world than we were maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago in the restaurant industry. And people want to have their own voice and be seen as an individual when they're ordering. And I think that respect and that etiquette of making eye contact, you know, ordering and making sure that the guests are taken care of individually and not, you know, bypassing them and expecting or assuming someone else is ordering for them because they're with the gentleman guest.
Well, we are out of time, but thank you all so much for being here today. Carolyn Elbert is a lecturer and internship coordinator for the Hospitality Management Program at Iowa State University. Michael Laval is the general manager and culinary director for the Des Moines Embassy Club. And Patricia Tice is the owner of Etiquette Iowa and author of Agra Manners Tips for Professional Success. This is the first in our summer series on jobs in Iowa, Iowa at Work, at noon on River to River today with Ben Kiefer. We'll be talking about working for minimum or low wages. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.